He is the first Catholic chaplain in the history of the House of Representatives. An exclusive interview with Father Daniel Coughlin is straight ahead. We will also take you to Philadelphia for a massive march through town in our World Camp segment. And a new Raphael exhibit is premiering at the Getty Museum. All of that and this week's headlines coming up next on The World Over Live.
From our EWTN studios, Raymond Arroyo.
Welcome to The World Over Live. Our interview with the House Chaplain and our other features are coming up. But first, news from the world over this week. In Holland this week, the Dutch Parliament's lower house voted to legalize assisted suicide. The law will allow those suffering unbearable sufferings to take their own lives, so long as their illness has been medically diagnosed as terminal. It will also permit minors aged 16 and above to choose assisted suicide without parental consent. The measure was passed by a vote of 104 to 40. The bill is expected to pass easily in the Senate and will come into force next year. The Dutch Bishops' Conference has issued a statement condemning the proposal, and the Vatican has also voiced its disapproval. Spokesman Joaquin Navarro-Valls noted that the measure violates natural law and individual conscience and called it a sad step for the Netherlands. And in Rome, the Vatican has announced dates for John Paul II's trip to the Ukraine. The Pope will make his historic visit June 21st through the 24th of 2001. Ukraine is mainly Eastern Orthodox, but has a large Catholic population. Relations between Catholics and the Orthodox have been strained of late due to property disputes over churches seized during the communist occupation. The Vatican hopes the visit will further improve relations between the two churches. And in Moscow, Russian Orthodox Patriarch Alexei II has agreed to meet with John Paul II during his Ukraine visit under one condition. Proselytization and evangelization by Catholics in the Ukraine must cease, according to the Patriarch. The Pope and the Patriarch had planned to meet in 1997, but the meeting was canceled over similar disputes. And in Beirut, the Melkite Greek Catholic Church has elected a new Patriarch, Archbishop Lutfi Lehum. Becomes the Patriarch of Antioch and has chosen the name Gregory III. He will lead the more than 1 million faithful who belong to this Eastern Rite Catholic Church, which enjoys full communion with the Holy See. We wish him the best. And in the Middle East, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak has issued new proposals for an interim peace accord with the Palestinians. Barak said that Israel was prepared to recognize a Palestinian state and give up another 10% of the West Bank. Palestinians have branded the proposals partial solutions because they do not include any concessions on East Jerusalem. Mr. Barak's peace deal comes in the wake of calls by the opposition Likud party this week for early elections, 2 years ahead of schedule. Opposition leader Ariel Sharon says the early elections are necessary.
In order to reach peace, when all of us are committed to peace, we must have as wide consensus as possible and unity. And I'm afraid that Prime Minister Barak didn't understand that, and he failed. He had several opportunities in the last year and a half. I think three times he could have done it, but he failed in that.
Officials say that the vote will be held next May, giving Barak time to end the violence and jumpstart the peace process. Failure would likely lead to a victory for the Likud party, whose leader, Ariel Sharon, sparked the recent violence in the region following his appearance at the Temple Mount back in September. And in Mexico City, Vicente Fox has been sworn in as president of Mexico. He is the country's first openly Catholic president since the mid-1800s. Leaders from around the world came to greet the new leader at his Mexico inaugural ceremony. Mr. Fox started the day, unlike any president in the last 130 years, by visiting the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe. His first planned stop was a breakfast with homeless children. Then it was on to a series of events with figures such as Cuban dictator Fidel Castro and U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright.
Protesto, guardar,
I hereby
hacer guardar la
swear
constitución
to
política
keep
de los Estados Unidos Mexicanos.
y las leyes que de ella emanen, y desempeñar leal y patrióticamente el cargo de presidente de la República que el pueblo me ha conferido, mirando en todo por el bien y la prosperidad de la Unión, por los pobres y marginados de este país. Y si así no lo hiciere, que la nación me lo demande.
May this nation demand that I do so.
Fox is a member of the conservative National Action Party and won the presidency in July by defeating the PRI party, which had held power for over 70 years. And in Sudan, there are more reports of violence. Government warplanes bombed a Catholic school in the southern part of the country, according to local diocesan officials. The planes made three passes at the site and dropped a total of 14 shrapnel bombs. Two classrooms were destroyed and hundreds of children were sent running for cover. Many children are still missing since the November 24th strike. Church officials called the attack yet another sign of Khartoum regime's war against children. And in Great Britain, a new report claims that nearly half the population has no religious affiliation. According to the National Center for Social Research, 44% of Britons now say they belong to no denomination, compared to 31% in 1983. The report also revealed that two-thirds of young adults see nothing wrong with premarital sex, and 36% believe that homosexuality is not wrong. Also in England this week, the age of homosexual consent is set to be lowered from age 18 to 16. New House of Commons Speaker Michael Martin said the government is using extraordinary powers to push the measure through Parliament. And in Bethlehem, the recent violence is taking a toll on Christmas. With the recent fighting, Christmas here won't be the same. The shops are empty and decorations remain unsold. Bullets frequently land just meters away from this shop in the center of town. I spent thousands doing up my shop for this Christmas, this man is saying, but there are no tourists, and the few people who have come are in a hurry to get out again. They are afraid. Over a million tourists have been expected. It is less than a month to go before Christmas, and this would usually be Bethlehem's prime tourist time, but the streets are deserted. Usually Christmas here is an elaborate affair, but this year most of the celebrations have been canceled. There will be a midnight mass, but no special choirs, no festivities. The fireworks this year have been of a different kind. There are nightly gun battles in nearby Gilo. Two Palestinians were killed in exchanges just this morning.
People are not in the mood to celebrate. They don't go and do fireworks and sing and feel festive and happy when you have someone suffering around. The people are just not in the mood.
This is the Paradise Hotel. Two floors of the hotel were hit by tank shells. The Christmas message of peace could hardly be further from the town where it all began. And on a lighter note, we need a lighter note, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas in New York City and everywhere you go. At Rockefeller Center this week, the plaza's huge Christmas tree was illuminated by 30,000 lights. Massive crowds gathered to watch the event. Olympic gold medalist Tara Lipinski, who was a recent guest on this program, performed on the ice rink before the towering 80-foot Norway spruce. In New York, at least, the lighting of the tree signifies the official start of the Christmas season. In Rome, the Pope recently presided over yet another jubilee. In his effort to reach all members of society, this jubilee celebrated agricultural workers and their collaboration with nature. Here is tonight's Vaticano.
Breath of Earth, a musical piece composed with sounds from all over the world and heard last Saturday in the Paul VI Audience Hall during a meeting between 80,000 farmers and the Holy Father. Breath, a language that people who work in the agricultural world know well, as the Pope mentioned during the Mass on Sunday, because they're able to hear the voice of earth and seeds, grass and trees, fruit and flowers. They're able to say thank you to the Creator for these gifts. The Pope and farmers heard the witnesses of various people like Severian missionary Father Angelo Panza and a group of Indians, protagonists of a reforestation project in Mato Grosso.
dell'essere umano che pensava di tirare da questo terreno, questa foresta, qualcosa di...
The craziness of human beings who thought they could get something else out of this forest, destroying it. This is what we see now. The forest has disappeared, the land is becoming a desert, and everything that was bioenergetic and potential, the beauty of the forest, has disappeared. It's not right to destroy, and if we continue to cut down trees, people themselves will disappear. White people should understand this. I want everyone to work together to help replant trees. This is my message. Father Panza in the Paul VI Hall brought to the Pope one of the 250,000 small shrubs which will be replanted in Mato Grosso. Then scientist Antonio Zucchi addressed the Pope. He represents 10,000 colleagues in 115 nations who deal with environmental emergencies like desertification and the drying up of large river basins. It was the Pope who called the world's attention to the danger of an environmental holocaust. He has given us the instrument to work scientifically and voluntarily to tell everyone that we are sure the problems of a scientific and technological nature can be resolved. In his conclusive address, the Pope outlined a real human ecology, condemning unequal distribution of wealth inside countries and around the world.
Ogni uomo, ogni popolo ha diritto a vivere.
Every person has the right to enjoy the fruits of the earth. It's an intolerable disgrace at the beginning of the new millennium that so many people still suffer from hunger and live in such disgraceful conditions.
Alla fame e vivano in condizioni indegne dell'uomo.
The dialogue between the Pope and people working in the agricultural world continued on Sunday morning in a crowded St. Peter's Square with over 100,000 faithful present. Many Italian farmers of the Col Diretti with their cats and yellow flags were also present. But in the square, the people who work for international organizations dedicated to the earth, from the FAO to PAM. The Pope reminded everyone that the burdens which still weigh upon the agricultural world, often due to the negligence of humanity, include too much industrialization and deforestation. Even trusting in the help of Providence, a Christian cannot avoid taking on responsible initiatives to ensure that the value of the earth is respected and promoted. Agricultural work has to be better organized and sustained by social measures which fully repay it for the effort it involves and the great utility that it provides.
Ed è l'utilità veramente grande che lo contraddistingue.
After reminding his listeners that the heart remains the first land to cultivate in faith, the Pope concluded the Angelus with a word of hope that the balanced use of resources and equal distribution of goods will in the future allow us to offer the world's population the food security that we all wish for.
When we return, we will bring you an exclusive interview with the new Catholic chaplain of the House of Representatives and your questions. We have much more for you. The World Over Live continues in a moment.
EWTN original documentary. Shot entirely in the Holy Land. Path of the Messiah. Tonight, only on EWTN. Did you miss Mother Angelica live this week? Well, here's what you missed Tuesday night.
Prayer is the most powerful weapon we have. The most powerful weapon. It's a weapon that reaches the heart of Jesus and Mary so fast.
Catch up on your Mother Angelica Live this weekend on Mother Angelica Live Tuesday Encore, Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern, only on the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.
Back to the World Over Live interview segment. I'm Raymond Arroyo. His appointment came amid intense controversy, but now, nearly a year later, the United States House of Representatives has its first Catholic chaplain in history. I recently talked with the chaplain in an exclusive interview in Washington, D.C. about his work and his life. If you have a question for Father Coughlin, send us an email at worldover@ewtn.com or call us at 1-800-221-9460. Here is Father Daniel Coughlin. Tell me, you were chosen under some very intense circumstances. Originally, a Presbyterian minister had been chosen after a Catholic priest was pushed aside for the post, I think it's fair to say. What was it like assuming this role in that atmosphere?
It all happened so quickly to me. It was just such a surprise, and I did not know any of the controversy. I think also, too, there is a mixed story. You give one version of it. There's a number of different stories about just how the speaker kind of got himself into a bind over the selection. It's the speaker's choice, or the speaker's
And he appointed
delegation.
That panel, apparently, right. Trying to be
19 people.
Generous,
bipartisan. It was the effort, and three names were submitted, and as you said, one was Presbyterian, one was Catholic, and I've met both of them, spent some time with them. I haven't met the third, have not met the third man yet, and met with the selection committee. So I got different versions of the story.
Right. How did this all happen? How were you chosen?
I was in a meeting, a regular monthly meeting that I had with a group when I was acting with my partner, Vicar of a Priest, and got a call from Cardinal Francis George. He said, could you come to my house tomorrow? And I said, Reverend, I don't have my calendar. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm sure I could be at your house tomorrow, no matter what. And he said, well, I don't want this to be real spooky. I just need to know that, and I'll get back to you about it later. So at the end of the meeting, he called back and said, you may have heard me describing when we were in conversation with those other priests just last Sunday, because he was calling me on a Tuesday, on a Monday rather, and he said, week ago Monday, that we had been talking about the speaker was looking for a chaplain for the house. Well, he called and he wanted a short list of names. I put your name on there, and then this is so like Cardinal Francis George. He said, I know you can do it, and if you do it, you'll be in the history books. And then he laughed.
And you accepted.
Well, it wasn't just that quickly as acceptance. It was meeting what I thought, these things always started with the FBI, you know, from all the movies.
Right,
you know,
right.
First, that's the first thing they check out. Instead, it was two of Mr. Hastert's aides. And it was with an interview with them for over an hour.
And you had been praying for a long time for God to sort of lead you to your next step. Your tenure was running out as vicar of priests in Chicago, and you wanted something else.
That's right. I kept a great Jesuit spiritual director who said, you're not looking for a job, are you, Dan? I said, no, I'm looking for the will of God. And so I was practicing, with his help, what I was calling fasting of the heart. I wasn't imagining myself somewhere. I wasn't bringing it up at every conversation. What am I going to do, or who should I be talking to, and so forth. I just left it peacefully in God's hands. And, of course, when I went to see my director and told him that I'd been interviewed, he laughed. He said, see, when you place in God's hands, almost anything can happen. Or anything can happen, is what he said.
Amazing.
Anything can happen.
Now, tell me about your tenure now at the House. You're in the House of Representatives. This had to be a bit of a culture shock. How have you influenced the members, and how are they receiving you?
Influence. I don't know if I've had influence upon them. They've had influence upon me. Of course, the whole culture has had an influence upon me. Mm-hmm. The influence is in that sense, I think, is the aim, at least from my perspective, is mutual. Mm-hmm. To come to know them and let them come to know me.
Right.
Some of them, I don't think, have been this close to a Catholic priest before.
Right.
Come from entirely different religious backgrounds, or maybe without a religious affiliation.
Well, there was this concern, I remember, when the committee was looking at candidates. They were afraid that a Catholic priest wouldn't understand family life enough in the counseling. Mm-hmm. Have you met any of that resistance?
No, no. I haven't met any resistance or any of that so-called anti-Catholic attitude at all. I've described it in the sense of, from the time of interview, trying to just leave this in God's hands, not having too much sense of the emotion or the impact of it all and how significant it was going to be,
right,
until after I was sworn in, turned around, and people came from both sides of the aisle and just introducing themselves. And ever since then, it's just been that way.
Been okay. Yeah. Tell me, I know you've had some really challenging assignments, if you will, while on the Hill. Two suicides. What is it like dealing with that sort of intense tragedy under these circumstances where so many eyes are upon the people you're counseling,
mm-hmm,
and their time is so abbreviated and short?
Interesting enough, I think here on the Hill, things have a life of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So what publicity happens or how much notoriety there is to a given event and so forth, I really don't. It's kind of foreign to me. It's larger than me and so
right.
forth. I would say the impact of those things were much more powerful to me when I was the pastor.
Huh.
When you're in the smaller community and everybody is involved and the intensity is
right.
felt throughout the whole community when
right.
a tragedy happened like that happened here. Right. When things happen here, you know, it's amidst a lot of other news,
mm-hmm.
a lot of other energies.
Right.
So I can, in that sense, stay much more focused with the individuals involved and with the families and the staff that are affected.
Tell me,
I like it pastorally in that sense, you know.
Right. Tell me about your daily routine. How do you cope with that ever-changing, we've got to get to a vote, we've got to get to a meeting, Father, I've only got 5 minutes, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut our meeting short. How do you deal with that? What's the daily routine for you?
That's a very good question. It's frequently asked, and I don't have an answer to it. And that's because as I was adjusting and members kept asking, how are you doing, Father, and so forth, I said, well, I keep looking for patterns. I really work well with patterns. Mm-hmm. And they said, no patterns here on the Hill. And it's proven true.
Yeah.
So every day is very different. So the virtue I need, or I see the chaplain needs, is flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the interruptives. I mean, I've been there where a nicely dinner is set for this group of, and I've given the invocation, and just as everybody are about to dive in, the bells ring, mm-hmm. like school, you know, and
right.
they all run. And some of them come back for the dinner, and some just keep going. And appointments constantly with an eraser, you know. Most significant are even, you know, big events like joint sessions of Congress. I put in my calendar and they get canceled. So
you never know.
You don't know.
Present moment really comes
exactly,
in handy.
Exactly. So in that sense, it's good to know that other people are in charge of that agenda and that calendar. I only need to react to the members.
Father, do you ever talk to members about particular legislation that has a moral component?
Legislation sometimes has deep moral components to it, high ethical significance. And sometimes some of the issues, as I understand them,
mm-hmm.
now they're very complex, but sometimes when I hear what they, looking at the papers of what they will be discussing, and sometimes on the floor what I hear being discussed, I know it flies in the face sometimes of what I believe is a solid Catholic teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But this is America where we don't all profess the same faith and we don't all have the right slant or the same slant on issues. And I've come to realize that when visitors would come through often enough, I would say, pray for unity in the house. Pray for the chaplain, pray for unity in the house. And I come to realize, no, the house is diverse. And that's not saying that we need to be diverse on moral issues.
Right.
But I believe that the issues are, the moral issues are so deep sometimes that
right.
the complexity of the way they come up in legislation
right.
gets very complex. So I believe the Republic is set up well in the sense that we vote for the person that we think can make the right judgment in the given circumstances. I also have come to see that there are so many lobbyists, and we tend always to think lobbyists are,
right.
you know, big money groups.
Right.
No, there are a lot of lobbyists that are good moral fighters.
Folks. Yeah.
Yes, and the bishops have their liaisons on the Hill. Mm-hmm. The Archdiocese of Washington has its liaison on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Different churches are representing wonderful Christian values on the Hill,
mm-hmm.
and they're organized in different ways. And I look upon them as the evangelizers, you know, in that moral formation, trying to get the members' attention.
And you look upon yourself as what?
As the spiritual director, the pastor.
How do you deal
when
with...
When they're in conflict or in
right.
complex, then
they turn to
you, hopefully.
How do you deal with non-Catholics? Do you give spiritual direction to non-Catholics?
Anyone who would want to see me and talk about an issue.
Do whether, they see you?
Yes, they do.
Mm.
And it can be just like in any parish, it can be family issues, health issues, relationships, and sometimes the job.
Do you see a greater acceptance for Catholicism and understanding because you're on the Hill and they see this kid, they start their day with a prayer from a Catholic priest and see him in the halls?
No, what I have seen, however, is great, great esteem for John Paul II. John Paul II. And in fact, they are going to present the Congressional Medal of Honor to him.
Right. What an honor and what a right. intersection in history when the first Catholic chaplain is there and now the gold medal. It's the first time it's presented to a pope, correct?
I believe so. I believe so.
From your vantage point, where are we spiritually? You see members from all around this nation. Judging from that group of people, where are we spiritually? Where are we morally as a country?
I think a great deal of it is judged very superficially and sometimes lived superficially.
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe that the more sophisticated life, and many of us live very complex lives these days, no matter what strata of society you're in,
mm-hmm.
especially in America. And also if you're in a leadership position, such as a priest, such as a member of Congress, a solid, solid, deep prayer life is essential.
Mm. Tell me, what is the most common thing you hear from members? What do they come to you about? What are they wrestling with and what are they most concerned about?
Family.
Lack of time for family.
Family is a big concern. I think in that sense, family values, when you hear that quoted as they want legislation, family values, some of that's coming from a lot of personal concern, tragedy, tension, issues in their own lives or in the lives of people that they're very close to. I don't think that's a made up issue for public, you know, just for public consumption. I think these are people. Let me just give you an example. I took it upon myself when it was a list came out, number of people who were not going to be returning to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
They're retiring or taking on other jobs or pursuing other government work,
mm-hmm.
To visit with them and have them tell me their story of Congress.
Right.
And it would just remain with the chaplain. It's mine because I'm trying to learn from their experience. But one of the pieces was the elder statesmen, people now approaching retirement, so very concerned because people, men and women, coming to Congress are younger and younger as
right.
the time goes on. And they know how difficult the pressures were on their marital relationship and on the relationship with their children.
Mm.
And it was very wonderful to hear their deep compassion, concern for younger members to lay this stress on themselves and their younger families.
This must put an enormous amount of stress on you as well. Coming from Chicago, my sense from the things I've read about you is that by nature you are more reflective. Mm-hmm. You've even described yourself, part of you as monk-like.
Right.
How is that challenged here?
It's confirmed. It's confirmed. I take refuge in my morning time. I don't let anything interrupt that. I need to get more exercise, for instance. I probably should be journaling some of my wonderful experiences better. But I don't let that creep into my morning time, which is my prayer time.
And how much of time do you put set aside for prayer in the morning?
2.5 hours. Mm. And so I just that's what I have to live out of. Mm-hmm. And and any time returning to any kind of a prayer with somebody else, or a public prayer or leading prayers, I'm
right.
invited to do a lot of invocations and those kinds of things.
Right.
Those are just kind of gifted moments sometimes during the course of the day, but I can never rely on them. So I have to.
It all springs from that morning.
It does.
That morning time. What do you do to relax, to pull away from this, from the hustle and bustle of the hill and the bells and the boats?
I have found a great blessing was within a week of my announcement. In fact, it was just 2 or 3 days afterwards. I was invited into a priest group, Jesus Caritas, mm-hmm. priest fraternity group here in Washington. Those priests become fast brothers in the priesthood and friends. So that's a great support system. Mm-hmm. I still try to stay in a close communication with some of my priest friends and my family. Mm-hmm. My mother is 86, so I try to stay in close phone conversation.
And an usher at Wrigley Field, as some will
Well, remember. Yes. praise God, she went through another season, and now they have another whole matter of months to gear up for another victory next year. Always next year.
Well, God love her and God love you. I thank you so much, Father Coughlin,
thank
for coming,
you.
And I hope you'll come again.
Thank you very much.
The chaplain is now joining us by telephone to take your questions. Father Coughlin, thank you for joining us again. We have an email here. This is from Sandy. She writes, Father Coughlin, I admire your integrity and all that you do in Washington. Do you see any changes for the good coming out of D.C.? It seems there is so much evil and we never hear any good news. God bless, and it's Sandy from Birmingham. What do you say to her, Father?
Well, I do think there is a lot of good news on the Hill, at least from my perspective, Sandy. I don't think the good news travels as well. Maybe it's not carried by the media as well. I do see a lot of deeply committed Christian Americans, committed Catholics, and committed Jews who are looking out for the best of the country from their own perspectives. And I think a lot of them are serving the government really out of deeply religious motivation.
Hmm. Father, we have a call. This is Jane from California. Go ahead, Jane. You're on the World Over Live.
Hey, this is Jane. Thanks for taking my call. Father Coughlin, God bless you in your position as U.S. chaplain. And here's my question.
Yes, Jane.
How do you view the current presidential election controversy here in the U.S.? Does it show the health of our democratic system or the moral decline of our society or both? And I'll hang up. Wait for your answer. Thanks.
Good question. Father, what do you say to her?
Well, I think, first of all, Jane, I think we're all getting a real quick civics lesson here. This isn't the first time in our history where we've had elections like this. I'm sure as you were, learned a lot from the Tilden controversy, but the one that I guess historically that all this has made me aware of is that Jefferson was taken to the House, and they had to go through 30 to 36 votes in order to land on one of our finest presidents.
Jefferson and Burr.
Pardon me?
It was Jefferson and Burr, I believe.
Yes, yes. I think we're learning a lot through this. I do think, Jane, your question is a very good one, though, because it does have so many people disturbed. First, I think from a general point of view, I think it shows how fragile every government is. especially governments that are of the people, for the people. And so we have to keep working at that.
Father, is there a moral lesson here for all of us? What are you hearing on the Hill? Is there a spiritual implication in this, in the sense that we don't have a president yet so far after the election? Mm-hmm. And what would you say to people?
Well, what I've been saying to him, I think, first of all, what I hear most on the Hill is, I think, again, the media and the lawyers and public relations, people are having great field days here.
Oh, sure.
The people are most entertained in Washington, I think, by all this. Mm-hmm. The people closest to government say, we have a president now. January 20th, we will have a president. And they're really convinced that the system does work, and it will work after we go through maybe unnecessary steps that we haven't to go through. Let me just put a religious perspective on it, though.
Sure, please.
When I was home for Thanksgiving, people were saying to me, we didn't have these problems before the Catholic chaplain got there. It must be all your fault, Dan. And I say, well, let's go back to the book of Genesis. First chaos, then the breathing on the waters, and then the new creation. Mm. I still strongly believe that all of this kind of thing does give us a moral quickening and awakening, and mm-hmm. the power of prayer, and I hope not just in individuals or in parties, but hope in God, that God can use any of us.
And indeed this whole situation to somehow clarify our vision and bring us to where he wants us.
Right.
Father, here's another question, an email from Scott Weinberg. He writes, Father Coughlin, what approach do you have for the spiritual care of congressmen who are Catholic but who support abortion and abortion funding? Thanks and God bless with prayers, Scott Weinberg, Front Royal, Virginia.
One of the things I have come to realize, and I have talked to Father Pavone about this more than once, that the Priests for Life, as an example, but there are others also on the Hill daily, visiting and talking to congressmen and the real evangelists for the good news of the life ethic. When and if they come to me with matters of conscience, then I deal with it as I would with anyone in a pastoral and a confessional mode of conscience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you bring Catholic teaching to bear? Do you try to make them aware of the Catholic teaching?
Well, some of them that would speak to me are not Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I convince them of what I believe is sound truth, and try to put it into those terms of truth and belief, based on their own convictions. And when somebody is in conflict, you know they're already moving. You
right.
know, and that's, but I do believe, I want to say, on these particular matters, it's Father Pavone and others that really are the vanguards and the evangelists,
right.
Changing the consciences.
Right, and your mission really is to minister and to help the members of Congress in their spiritual journey.
Right.
Mm-hmm. On one-on-one. Here's another question. This comes from Helen in Florida. She writes, Dear Father Coughlin, how difficult is it for a Christian to retain his or her principles as an elected federal official? Do you ever get these sorts of conflicts, Father, when a certain piece of legislation comes up?
I believe...
Do you hear this from those who come to you?
Yeah, I think people really... I I'm very new at this. I would tend to think that people are more when they're dealing with an issue that is on the floor of Congress, and they're really wrestling out that issue. There are a lot of people, a lot of advisors, the members one to another. Certainly, their parties and the elder statesmen of the group all have an influence on them and
right.
their thinking. But I think. Basically, with many of them, it's when they're pressed by a camera to say something, and they're not, or they're pressed by a controversy that may not even be a part of them, and they're just off. They're supposed to give an opinion. I think that's sometimes when they're caught off guard and they say something that maybe sometimes they regret.
Mm-hmm.
So they do feel compromised in that sense, that they didn't look at something all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they look at legislation all the way through. And some of the throwaway lines or some of the conversations they get caught into are of a different context.
Father, one more email. This is an easy one. It says, Dear Father Coughlin, where is your office situated? Thank you and God bless. This is Jesus Alberto Sanchez from Laredo, Texas.
All right. Well, I hope the Sanchez would come and visit. They can find me in the Capitol building on the first level. I'm in HB 25.
Do you have a staff, Father, that helps you, a group of people helping you in your efforts there?
No, I don't have a staff nor budget, I find great assistance from the clerk's office. The clerk is another officer,
uh-huh.
and his budget includes the operations of the chaplain and his people in the office, especially one person by the name of Don Myhill, is of service to the chaplain.
Very good. Father Coughlin, I thank you for enduring our cameras and our questions, and I want to thank you for joining us, and hope you'll do it again soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Father.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
Bye.
And next, we will take you to a remarkable crisis pregnancy center in the Washington area, helping those who often cannot help themselves. The World Over Live continues in a moment.
Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen.
Devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus became widespread after our Lord appeared to St. Margaret Mary in a vision. Jesus promised to grant to all those who would receive Holy Communion on the first Friday of 9 consecutive months that his Sacred Heart would be their refuge at the hour of their death. Today is the first Friday of the month.
Now, once again, Raymond Arroyo.
Welcome back to the World Over Live. In the United States, the Hispanic population is growing rapidly. But what of those Latinos caught in difficult situations? What of the women who find themselves with an unplanned pregnancy? For many, abortion is the solution. But a center called Centro Tepeyac is presenting Hispanic women with another choice. Our EWTN News correspondent Rebecca Amos recently traveled to the center just outside of Washington, D.C. She files this report.
Through these doors is Centro Tepeyac, a pregnancy crisis center that is saving the lives of the unborn. Pictures like these would not exist but for the efforts of counselors like Eugenia and Mary, people who are willing to share the beauty of bringing life in the world, the tragedy of abortion and the culture of death. Mary, a mother of 12, heads this program that counsels over 800 women each year.
So many young women come here and they are in a crisis pregnancy. How do you all get them to come to the terms of saying, yes, I will have this child?
Well, we feel that a woman who's considering abortion is usually not clear as to what an abortion is. And so education is our main goal, is to teach her what an abortion is, how the baby is developing within her. We have wonderful fetal models that we use. We're able to show her what a 10-week baby looks like, and usually there's a certain amount of shock because they've been told that, no, it's just a blob of tissue.
That has to be very rewarding, finding these children months later and seeing them healthy and happy and knowing that perhaps they would not have been born if it wasn't for that counseling. With that said, will you take us through a story in particular that you've mentioned to me about a young lady who had had 7 abortions and found herself pregnant for the 8th time?
Yes, this is a recent story, and she's a young woman and had never told anyone about her previous abortions. She came into us thinking that she would probably abort this one as well. After the counseling and during the counseling, the counselor was able to get her to open up. And a lot of what we do that is so effective is really listening to the women and not jumping in with information until they've had a chance to really tell us what's on their mind. We try to be very woman-focused as opposed to baby-focused, which in the past pregnancy centers have possibly made that mistake of jumping right to the unborn child rather than listening first to see what the crisis is. And once it was established that she had had these 7 abortions and how they had affected her, from there it was a pretty easy shot to save the life of this child.
Tell us a little bit about how you translate being a mother yourself into these counseling sessions you have with women.
The beauty about this job is that you give and you get a lot more back. The women teach you so much about the value of life. You're constantly learning from them as they learn from you. So it's I think having the children, my children, has allowed me to, although I've never been in the dire situations that these women find themselves in, you know, has allowed me to know that you can get through it with the help of God.
How are you able to give them the opportunity to see that if they reach into their hearts that this is not something that God wants, that abortion is against God's will?
Right. Well, we have found in the studies that have been done on why women choose abortion that no one ever chooses it as a good in itself. They see it as the least of three evils. The first evil being motherhood, because, well, actually they see adoption as the worst evil, and they see motherhood as the second worst evil, and an abortion then becomes the least of the three. We try to help them to see that motherhood is not an evil, that motherhood can be a very good thing, even if you haven't planned for it. So again, we try to focus on that and showing them that there's a way out. The women that come to our center are often in their 20s. They're not in their teens. They're here because they're working and they're sending money back home. Frequently, they have children back home. So sometimes they've you know, they know what a pregnancy is because they've experienced it, but they've been duped into thinking that here in the U.S. abortion is easy and it's a quick solution and it'll allow them to continue helping their other children. And we try to show them that they can still help their children. But we have to turn to the faith and to Our Lady of Guadalupe. We use her a lot in the counseling because the solutions and the problems are so great that only by turning to Our Lady can they really have the strength to carry on. And we show them in our own lives that we do it as well.
What about the person that walks through the door that has had those abortions in their past and want to find some healing?
You want her to accept God's forgiveness for what she's done. And you have to sort of walk her through the steps of grieving for her lost child and naming the child. The problem is that when women have an abortion and later on get pregnant, they didn't realize that the pregnancy would revoke memories of the abortion very strongly. And so we have to help them through it.
Central Tepeyac is designed to meet the needs of Hispanics like Esperanza. A mother of 6 from Guatemala, she takes us back a year ago when she found out she was expecting twins.
Mm-hmm. No,
it wasn't the right moment. I cry and I call Central Tepeyac because whenever I need something, I always call.
What did they tell you with this pregnancy to encourage you to have the child?
The first thing she told me was that if I was pregnant, it's because God loves me a lot and that I was a good mother, and he knew that.
For a person that has been in the same situation as you and found themselves with multiple pregnancies, a young woman, perhaps it's difficult financially, and that young woman has considered having an abortion, what would you tell that person?
I will tell her not to consider having an abortion because a child is the most beautiful thing you can have, and God helps you in the end.
When you talk about God helping you, tell me how spiritually you found strength to have so many children.
For me, it was very hard to believe in God, and Central Tepeyac helped me a lot to have more faith in, and they have helped me economically morally and spiritually. Abortion is not the solution. I will ask these people, even if they have husbands or they don't have husbands, not to consider abortion, that it is not the solution. There are other ways that people can help them. I will ask them to go and find that help.
Centro Tepeyac is helping. Here, tears turn to joy when women say yes to life.
God bless them and give them strength to continue the job that they're doing, because I know it's not easy.
Thank you, Rebecca. For more information about Centro Tepeyac, they can be reached at 1-800-643-5007. Again, the number is 1-800-643-5007. Now we want to take you to California for a glimpse of a new exhibit at the J. Paul Getty Museum. The traveling exhibit is entitled Raphael and His Circle, Drawings from Windsor Castle. The priceless collection allows us to peer into Raphael's early creative attempts right on through his now legendary commissions for Pope Julius II. Here is our arts and culture segment.
The selection of drawings presented here is a group of drawings from Windsor Castle. They all come from the print room in Windsor Castle. And I think they present a unique selection in terms of Raphael's career, because you can cover his entire career through the galleries, from his very early period in Florence, where he's learning and assimilating and looking at other artists, all the way through to his great commissions and most important commissions in Rome, and his commissions working for the Pope. The Disputa was Raphael's first commission in Rome. He was summoned by Pope Julius II to come to Rome and to work in the private apartments of the Pope in the Vatican City. His first commission was this fresco that stands behind me, the Disputa, of which we're showing a life-size, full-size photographic reproduction of. So we're essentially bringing a part of the Vatican City to Los Angeles, and we'll hope the public will appreciate this as much as we have ourselves here. I mean, I feel right at home here. And he was working, of course, meters away from Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapel. And he was new, and he was conscious that his work was going to be compared to Michelangelo, his great competitor and rival at the time. In the drawing, it's very obvious that he's trying to make this as perfect as possible and as wonderful as possible. And he knew that the Pope would be constantly checking on him. Pope Julius II was really living in those rooms where he was painting. We remember that his papal bedroom was just two doors away. The fresco by Raphael is really centered on the altar and on the Eucharist, the central element of the composition. And on its sides, it has a real true hustle and bustle of earthly figures, which include the four great fathers of the church, including Saint Jerome, which is represented to the left of the altar with his lion and his cardinal's hat placed in front of him. And if we move more towards the left, we'll see Raphael really portraying his contemporaries, including one of his great friends, the artist Bramante, who was the architect of St. Peter's. Included amongst the figures are monks, cardinals, and other figures that were represented at court probably and in the Vatican during Raphael's time. And I think really the charm of this fresco is the fact that you can really feel the essence of the city life in the Vatican at the time and have a glimpse of Raphael's contemporaries, who he was associating with, who were the people who were running around him in the Vatican. And it really gives us a taste of contemporary life at the time in the 16th century.
Raphael and His Circle, Drawings from the Windsor Castle, runs through January 7th at the Getty. Later on, it will go to London and return to the United States, where it will be displayed at the National Gallery in Washington starting next May. Now let's go to tonight's WorldCam. Tonight, an extraordinary display of faith from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
On Sunday, October 22nd, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, more than 40,000 Catholics gathered by car, bus, and foot for a special Eucharistic candlelight procession. Cardinal Anthony Bevilacqua, Archbishop of Philadelphia, commenced the procession in the late afternoon by placing the Blessed Sacrament on a portable altar. In his opening remarks, the Cardinal invited the faithful to reflect on, quote, a Eucharistic Lord who is the way, the truth, and the life. The procession of the Blessed Sacrament then made its way through the streets of the city and was greeted by joyful songs, raised candles, and prayerful meditation. Reflecting on the visible devotion of the assembled, Cardinal Bevilacqua had this to say.
What impressed me was the silence. You know, it was though you were in a church, and yet we were in a vast, outdoor area. And how the people, after they were told to lift up the candles, how they saw that as an act of worship and of reverence. And how many, I saw so many, say, genuflecting or actually kneeling on the ground. And it was funny at the time seeing the parents getting their children to do it. That's how children get to learn. And so the children would drop down. But it was a beautiful, beautiful act of the church tonight, of the Archdiocese.
We would love to include your video in our WorldCam. If you have recorded an event that merits the attention of our international audience, send us a VHS. Write up a short description of the event and include your contact information and send it to WorldCam, care of EWTN News, 5817 Old Leeds Road, Birmingham, Alabama, 35210. Again, the address is WorldCam, care of EWTN News, 5817 Old Leeds Road, Birmingham, Alabama, 35210. Remember, all tapes sent become the property of EWTN News, and we cannot return videotapes, but we're happy to send you a copy of the program in which it will appear. Well, that is all the time we have. We want to remind you about our upcoming Christmas special. We have a wonderful evening of song and interviews for you. We'll be joined by soprano Charlotte Church, the three tenors, and Grammy Award winner Aaron Neville. That premieres December 22nd right here on EWTN. If you'd like to contact us or comment on tonight's program, you can reach us at worldover@ewtn.com. In the meantime, we'll be scouting the world over for all that is seen and unseen. On behalf of the staff and crew of EWTN News, I'm Raymond Arroyo. See you next time.